Let's open our Bibles to Proverbs 11. Proverbs chapter 11. Verses 3 through 9. A section that deals with physical life blessing versus physical life misery. Physical life blessing versus misery. Your choice. You can enjoy this life here on earth, or you can experience fantastic misery and frustration. And by enjoying this life, we're talking about an inner joy, an inner contentment, an inner fulfillment. I'm not talking about having a good time. You can have a good time at almost anything you attempt. But it's what's going on on the inside, during, and after, that demonstrates to you that you're living an unfulfilled life, a life with no direction, with no purpose, and with no real happiness at all. Well, in verses 3 through 9, we deal with the principle of blessing versus misery. Now, in the writings of Moses, it's blessing versus cursing. I give before you today the blessing and the curse. The blessing, if you follow according to all that I've said to you. The curse, if you follow after other gods and neglect the truth that you've received. And that's basically what you have here. The emphasis in this passage is morality. But that's where physical life blessing is involved. That's what we're talking about with the term physical life, blessing or cursing. The moral arena. Normal human existence. We start then with verse 3a. Physical life blessing through integrity. The integrity of the upright will guide them. In connection with this, we have studied the doctrine of integrity. We've been spending many days on that. We have concluded it. So just recognizing your frame of reference, the doctrine of integrity, and everything that integrity in the soul produces for you, basically guide you in the right path for normal human living, also in the spiritual arena. There will be some overlap as we look at these 7 verses. The integrity of the upright will guide them. Point 1 is the doctrine of integrity, just for completion in your notes. Point 2, verse 4. Riches do not profit in the day of wrath. We're interested in the second part, I guess you put 4b. But righteousness delivers from death. Now, this is the first aspect of physical life blessing. Righteousness is the word tzedakah, T-S-E-D-A-Q-A-H, tzedakah. It's a normal word for righteousness. It refers to the expression of your integrity. It refers to the standards of divine morality as well as divine spirituality in the soul, or spiritual standards, I guess we should say. Righteousness then involves both moral and spiritual standards. It says it delivers from death. Well, what is this death that is being talked about here? I suggest to you that it is a premature physical death of divine discipline. We're talking about a believer, and by the way, when we do talk about the one who is righteous here, the one who is having integrity, we're talking about a believer who's making progress in the growth process. So what is this death that he is delivered from? It is a premature physical death of divine discipline. See, if he pursues and promotes righteousness in his life, that is, the knowledge and application of Bible truth, that he is going to be delivered from a premature death. Now, premature, in God's opinion, that doesn't mean he won't die next week. But it means he won't die in discipline. And he won't die before it's his time. It's always God's timing involved with our life. But it is our righteousness that makes certain that God does not turn us over to the natural consequences of the world. Or indeed, that God does not pick up the stick of applied consequences and discipline us so harshly that it results in the sin of death. It is righteousness that delivers from death. This is in contrast to the phrase, riches do not profit in the day of wrath, but we're going to look at that in connection with the second half of verse 3. All we're going to look at right now are the positive factors. So what you want under this, if you don't already have it that way, is that righteousness, or the possession of integrity, is going to deliver you from premature physical death. Point 3. We move to verse 5. A. The righteousness of the blameless will smooth his way. Again, the same word righteousness, tzedakah. The word blameless is tamim, so we're realizing we're talking about the man of integrity. Now, the blameless is the one who has spiritual integrity. Righteousness is the expression of that spiritual integrity. And what it will produce is a smooth way. Pardon me. What is a smooth way? Well, the word smooth is a verb. It looks like this. Yes, you want to put some sub points. Smooth is Y-A-S-H-A-R. Might be familiar to you. Yashar. It literally means to make straight rather than make smooth. Make straight. Thus, to put in line with an established standard. Yashar refers to a straight and narrow idea, thus morality. God's morality. Will make straight his way would be the best way to translate it. Will make straight his way. To interpret it, it's referring to moral consistency. See, giving him moral guidance. So, the way you can designate it is that spiritual integrity produces moral consistency. Spiritual integrity produces moral consistency. Makes straight his way. The word way is the word D-E-R-E-K. Derek. Now, there are several Hebrew words for way, or road, or path. And Derek, most of the time, refers to a general way, or way of life. The general direction you're going, thus, way of life. So he's going to make straight your way of life. Once again, then, the issue of moral consistency. Moral consistency is one of the key factors with regard to physical life blessing. We understand that morality, apart from spirituality, will provide a certain amount of stability and time for the unbeliever. It is designed to do that. But all it's going to do is give him a basis for stability within his society. As far as finding any real happiness and fulfillment in life, he's going to find himself always frustrated because of the presence of the old sin nature and the domination of the old sin nature in his life. But let us not neglect to recognize that the unbeliever can, through observance of morality, find a certain amount of stability within his society. This does not save him, nor does this give him any pull with God whatsoever. But all it does is provide him within his society to function in a stable way. Marriage, family, business, patriotism, all these factors. It enables him to function within society as a productive part of that society. Thus we see throughout our society and others, we see unbelievers in very productive roles. Those who have strong moral standards are very stable and contribute to the stability of society overall. Those who do not have strong standards have no stability and do not contribute to the stability of society. But we're talking here about what it is that's going to give you real moral consistency. The unbeliever, although he may be moral, is going to have one flaw. That one flaw is going to be his mind, his mental attitude. He's not going to have any control over the attacks of the old sin nature. The only thing that can keep the old sin nature in its place, Morality, rigid morality, will keep the old sin nature in its place overtly. It becomes an overt restriction to the old sin nature. You don't do it because you know you're going to get clobbered by society if you do. But it's not going to stop the mind. So true moral consistency is both mental and overt. And only the believer has the capacity to have moral consistency in the soul, because only Bible truth is going to render inoperative the old sin nature and the lusts of the old sin nature as they seek to dominate the soul. Point 4, verse 6. A. Righteousness, the righteousness of the upright will deliver them. Okay, well, this follows upon verse 5. Verse 5 says that the righteousness of the blameless will provide yashar, okay, will make straight. Follow me on that. Then in verse 6 it says the righteousness of the yashar. See, now it follows. Now once you're yashar, now what's yashar going to do? It's going to deliver you. What is it going to deliver you from? It's going to deliver you from the end of verse 5. Wickedness. Your own wickedness. It says that the wicked will fall by his own wickedness. This is natural consequences. We'll look at it again. But after establishing that, in verse 5, that the righteousness of the man of integrity will provide him moral consistency, make his way straight. The wicked is not going to make his way straight, but since he does not have righteousness, he has instead his own wickedness. He's going to fall by that wickedness. That fall is a failure to realize physical life blessings. He's going to be frustrated. He's not going to have consistency in his moral life because of the wickedness. Now, what is his own wickedness? His own wickedness is the lust of the old sin nature that caused him to reject divine viewpoint. Well, verse 6 then picks up, the righteousness of the upright will deliver them. Deliver them from what? Deliver them from the old sin nature. Look at the second half of verse 6. But the treacherous will be caught by their own greed. So here you have own greed compared to verse 5, own wickedness. Both of these words refer to the production of the old sin nature. In fact, the word greed actually means destructive desire. We'll look at it in more detail in a moment, but I'll give you the word anyway. H-A-W-W-A-A, pronounced Hawa. And it refers to a destructive desire. What is the destructive desire except the lust of the old sin nature? And they're going to fall by their own lust, their own desire. It's translated greed because it is expressed many times in a frantic search for happiness through the possession of details. But it is a destructive desire in many areas. So righteousness delivers. This is the third factor with regard to the believer experiencing physical life blessing. Righteousness delivers. That is, it is protection from self-destruction. Do you understand the term self-destruction? Look at the context. End of verse 5. Fall by his own wickedness. End of verse 6. Caught by their own greed. That's self-destruction. So, at the beginning of verse 6, when it says the righteousness of the upright will deliver them, that deliverance is from the self-destruction from the old sin nature. The old sin nature contributes to your self-destruction. But if you control the old sin nature through tzedakah, righteousness, it is the righteousness of the upright that delivers, see? So it is that righteousness produced in your life that is going to neutralize the old sin nature and prevent the self-destructive mode from having effect. Point 5. Verse 8. A. The righteous is delivered from trouble. Well, what is this word trouble? T S-A-R-A-H for point A. Sarah. And it means pressure. Pressure is trouble, but ideally, technically, this word refers to pressure. Pressure in general, which is trouble. These, then, refer to pressure effects from the cursed earth. And deliverance from trouble is what is promised here to, once again, the righteous. The word righteous here is the tzaddik, T-S-A-D-I-Y-Q. Now, this is the man who has tzedakah. You can see that, right? This is the one who has righteousness. And he is expressing that righteousness. The implication is that he is expressing it. And if he does express that righteousness, then he will be delivered from trouble, from tsara, from the pressures of the physical universe, the physical creation that he lives within. In contrast to that, the unbeliever, the wicked, is totally engulfed in that pressure. And notice how it's worded at Proverbs 11, verse 8, but the wicked takes his place. Okay? In other words, the righteous is delivered from this, but the wicked steps right in and receives the brunt of the cursed earth. The wicked cannot escape that. He is he's stuck, as it were, under the pressures of the cursed earth. There is nothing that is going to give him any kind of deliverance from it except the overt principle of morality. In other words, moral consistency is going to give him a certain amount of stability even over the cursed earth. But it's not going to protect him from natural consequences, others' old sin nature, calamities of nature, things of that sort. The believer is protected from all that pressure. And that's what the word sarah communicates there. In verse 8, the righteous is delivered from trouble. Point 6, the fifth factor with regard to a physical life blessing for the believer, for the man of integrity. Verse 9. And that's verse 9b. But through knowledge, the righteous will be delivered. Now, once again, we have deliverance again. But deliverance from what? This deliverance, if we look at the first part of verse 9, with his mouth, the godless man destroys his neighbor, but through knowledge, the righteous will be delivered. Now, but delivered from what? It sounds like almost that he's going to be delivered from the mouth of the godless man, but I don't believe that's what the context is really indicating. It's indicating that he's going to be delivered from the activity of the godless man. That is, he will be delivered from doing what the godless man does. The godless man cannot help but express his old sin nature in the destruction of his neighbor. And he does this through knowledge. So, for this factor, we have the fact that integrity preserves moral stability through control of verbal sins. Integrity preserves moral stability through control of verbal sins. Running down your neighbor. Running down anybody. There's no reason to constantly be running somebody down. Constantly be criticizing people. Constantly be defaming them. And it is through knowledge. The word knowledge is D-A-A-T-H, da'at. I guess you make that a point A. Because it is knowledge in the soul that is going to provide that protection from verbal sins. Because knowledge in the soul is going to temper the mental attitude. All verbal sins come from what? The mental attitude. So it is knowledge in the soul that will temper the mental attitude so that verbal sins will not be forthcoming. Now what you control here, compare here, is the word knowledge of righteous and the one who does express verbal sins in verse 9, the godless man. The problem with that word godless is that it is not translated correctly. Point B, the word godless is the word chanah, C-H-A-N, long A, P-H, and it means polluted. Polluted. It is the polluted man who destroys his neighbor with his mouth. The New Testament clarifies this quite a bit when it indicates that there's a mental attitude, sin, and the overflow of pollution that comes from that mental attitude, sin, is what? The verbal. We studied it before. And this is the same idea with this word kaneh. Well, most of you are familiar, fairly familiar with Hebrew words for God. Elohim, El Shaddai, Yahweh, Adonai. Kaneh has nothing to do with God. It's pointless to translate it godless. It's like translating Yusebea, godly. There's no God in there. The significance of Kaneh is that this man is polluted in his soul in contrast to Da'at, knowledge. The one who is polluted in his soul cannot help but express this mental attitude, or rather this verbal antagonism toward those around him. Now, there are degrees of this pollution. There are degrees of attitudes that express negative opinions and negative ideas through the tongue. These have to be controlled. This does not mean that if you have to make a proper evaluation, by all means make a proper evaluation. But Kaneh indicates that there is some degree of pollution. And we're dealing with extremes in verse 9. And so this person is totally dominated by the pollution in his soul. No truth. The believer, however, who has da'at, knowledge, is going to be protected, delivered from the syndrome of verbal sins. We have studied in the past the doctrine of verbal sins and have seen the devastation of it and how powerful it can be and how destructive it can be, or they can be. And it's something that really we do need deliverance from because it is an expression of our character flaws, our character weaknesses, and therefore we have to deal with the character law first. That's what da'at is designed to do, see? The righteous through knowledge will be delivered. It is knowledge that accomplishes that deliverance. Alright, we're ready now for verse 3b. Verse 3a was the physical life blessing through integrity. And each of the following verses, 4 through 9, with the exception of 7, amplifies physical life blessing, blessing in time, by cultivating spiritual and moral integrity. Verse 3b is natural consequences from rejecting creator policy for life. Now, creator policy is moral truth, put i.e., moral truth, and spiritual truth. Now, basically, the unbeliever is in view here, but you can always make application to the believer, because whenever the believer is out of fellowship and failing to apply truth that he has learned, or failing to apply truth that he hasn't learned, he imitates the unbeliever. And so although the primary contrast in the book of Proverbs is between a believer and an unbeliever, it looks at it from the standpoint of the ideal. So that we're talking about the way a believer should be. Every time you see the word righteous, every time you see the word wise in the book of Proverbs, it's talking about a believer the way he should be. There are believers who are not wise. There are believers who do not have any truth in their soul. And in that case, they are imitating the unbeliever who is considered the wicked in the passage. The evil, the sinners, and all these negative words throughout the book of Proverbs are talking about the unbeliever. But in application, the believer who is out of fellowship imitates the unbeliever. And therefore, the descriptions of the wicked apply just as well to the believer out of fellowship. Okay, verse 3b says, but the falseness of the treacherous will destroy them. Now, see, we haven't even got to that yet. When we started verse 3 several weeks ago, we jumped on integrity and studied the doctrine of integrity, and that was point 1 back there under verse 3a, was the doctrine of integrity, and we looked at those other passages. Now, under verse 3b, we have the principle that natural consequences result from rejecting creator policy for life. That is, rejecting moral truth, rejecting spiritual truth. Now, the unbeliever is going to reject spiritual truth in two areas. He's going to reject spiritual truth from the standpoint of the gospel, and therefore, obviously, he's going to reject spiritual truth for life because he does not have access to it. But we must recognize that he rejects spiritual truth and moral truth. He rejects the creator policy for him, therefore he's rejecting creator authority for him. All right, point 1. It says the falseness. The word falseness is S-E-L-E-P-H, pronounced Seleph. It means perversion and distortion. Perversion, distortion. The word occurs at Proverbs 15:4 also. You can get an idea of how it's used over there. And see how it's translated also. The New American doesn't seem to want to be consistent. It's true, some words have a variety of meanings. This is one that we can consistently translate as perversion or distortion. It says at 15:4, a soothing tongue is a tree of life, but perversion in it, in the tongue, crushes the spirit. But perversion in it, in the tongue, crushes the spirit. And of course, the marginal note there, it literally says, is the crushing of the spirit, results in the crushing of the spirit. But I wanted to want you to point out that this is, I want to point out to you, that this word perversion refers to the perversion in the tongue. That is, what is said is a distorted expression of what is in the mind. Everything that is said that is perverted and distorted first comes from the distortion and the perversion that is in the mind. Now, why do we use the word distortion and perversion? Because it is contrary to the policy God has laid down. Contrary to creator policy, it is abnormal. That's why when we study the old sin nature, we note that the old sin nature is full of insanity. And it's called insanity because it's operating abnormally, contrary to the way that the Creator intended for it to operate. That is, contrary to what the Creator intended the soul, how the soul to operate. And the old sin nature causes insanity in the soul, or perversions. A different word, of course. So back to 11:3. But the perversion of the treacherous. You can even translate distortion, but if you want to be consistent, both words communicate. But the perversion of the treacherous will destroy them. And oh, by the way, I should clarify that this word only occurs in these two places. Okay. It only occurs here. But the perversion of the treacherous. The word treacherous, point 2, is the word bagab, B-A-G-A-B-H. It is what we call a cow participle. In other words, it's a verb in participle form, but it's used as a noun. So it is the one who is treacherous. However, the word treacherous, or rather bagab, doesn't mean treacherous, it means deceiver. And yet, treachery is a type of deception, isn't it? So it does communicate the idea of deception. I like the
the word deceiver. Treacherous is a deceiver, so, you know, you don't need to change unless deceiver communicates a little bit more clear for you. It is plural, and therefore it is the deceivers. It is the perversion of the deceivers. The perversion in chapter 15, verse 4, was the perversion of what they had to say. In this passage, it's the perversion of the mind. It is what goes through their, what is in their soul that is in view. It is this perversion, a soul that rejects creator policy, rejects the existence of the creator, for that matter, the authority of the creator, and therefore perversion. Because this soul is trying to operate independently from God, trying to operate on its own terms. And what will result, it says, will destroy them. Point three. Will destroy them refers to the applied, well, we'll put it this way. Destroy, point three, means destroy. No need to bother with the Hebrew word at this point. Refers to spiritual and moral neutralization. So that there is no fulfillment in life. They are destroyed. It's not talking about death necessarily. It's not talking about losing your life. It's talking about having no fulfillment in life. That type of destruction. So that there's no point in really living. And you know, there are many, many people, believers and unbelievers alike, who are in the frame of mind that there is no purpose for remaining alive. No purpose to life. Now, these are people who have been around for a while. It begins in adolescence and moves beyond. Our young pre-adolescent kids have no concept of, you know, there's no reason to be alive because they live for pleasure. There's plenty of reasons to be alive. But once you get into adolescence, you start looking at the world in an entirely different way. Your soul becomes becomes newly adjusted to life around you. And if you are not prepared to handle all the effects of the cursed earth, you can develop an attitude of bitterness and pessimism and hopelessness. And that's why we have such a high suicide rate among teenagers today. It's getting worse and worse because of the breakdown of morals and the breakdown of spiritual truth, so that you have our young people having no fulfillment in life at such an early age. And it's just the family curse getting greater and greater and greater in our society. So destroy refers to neutralization in life. Point A under this, it is described by the applied consequences at verse 4. Applied consequences at verse 4. Which says, riches do not profit in the day of wrath. We're not interested at this point in the riches do not profit. We'll cover that under a separate point. But we're interested in the phrase, day of wrath. Now, does that communicate applied consequences to you? It should. It's not natural consequences. This is something, this is the day of wrath. Somebody's mad. You know, they say, Jesus is coming back and he's really mad. Well, the day of wrath indicates that someone is mad, and thus applied consequences, and it's a reference to justice, of course, divine justice. And when you face divine justice, when you face applied consequences as an individual, as a nation, as a societal group, riches won't profit. Your physical strength won't profit, won't help you. We'll cover that a little bit later. It talks about the strong man and his hope perishing. So basically, the day of wrath refers to applied consequences. Point B, it also refers to natural consequences. Natural consequences that remove physical life blessings. That remove physical life blessings. See, basically, you start out, even as an unbeliever, with the capacity to experience physical life blessings. through your moral consistency. And I say physical life lesson because it has nothing to do with the soul, see, on the inside. But if you neglect moral truth, if you turn away from it, then the natural consequences are going to remove the potential for physical life blessing. It's going to destroy that provision from God, even for the unbeliever. So that's what we're talking about, no fulfillment, no purpose in life. With regard to the day of wrath, we're basically talking about a physical death type situation. See, there is no other applied consequence to the unbeliever individually. God has no reason to discipline him. Well, I'm going to show this unbeliever, I'm going to give him cancer. And that will teach him. No, God is not going to discipline. Now, God may allow it, okay? But we're talking about applied. We're talking about God doing something. The only reason God has something to do to the unbeliever is physical death. It's time for him to be gone. Take him out. We see this illustrated mostly with regard to nations. God taking out a nation and many people dying as a result of that. A society being judged by God. This is the day of wrath. But we're also talking about the natural consequences that are discussed in verses 5 and 6. Now, we've already seen 5 and 6, but like I said, we'd be back to them. Verse 5b says, but the wicked will fall by his own wickedness. See? Own wickedness. Natural consequences. And the verse 6, the treacherous will be caught by their own greed. Natural consequences. And we'll see them in more detail when we get there. All right. Point 4. Wealth will provide no profit, no benefit, in the face of divine justice. Wealth does not benefit in the face of divine justice. Now, why is wealth made an issue here? Because this is the primary source of confidence in man. Man finds confidence in his wealth. He thinks wealth will buy everything. He thinks wealth can even buy happiness. And yet, he soon discovers that that is not the case. And although wealth can do many things in the physical arena, when it comes to facing divine justice, whether with regard to physical death in time, or indeed at the last judgment as an unbeliever, your wealth will not help you at all. When it's time for you to go, physically, you're not going to buy God off. You're not going to buy anybody off. And when you're facing God at the last judgment, you're not going to have your wealth with you. So wealth will not profit in the day of wrath. Point 5 is verse 5. And that, of course, is 5b. It says, the wicked will fall by his own wickedness. The word wicked is rasha, point A, R-A-S-H-A, rasha. And it refers to someone who practices that which is contrary to truth, that which is contrary to God's standards. We call it wicked. All the way through here, it's set up directly in contrast to what? Righteous. So obviously, wicked is not following righteous standards. We could translate it unrighteous, except that it don't have a negative in front of it. It's a word all by itself that means that which is contrary to the righteousness of God. So he's called the wicked. The wicked will fall. Fall simply refers to natural consequences. It goes back to verse 3, destroy them. Falseness, or the perversion, rather, of the treacherous will destroy them. This is described here by fall. So they're going to fall. This is self-destruction. We call it self-destruction because it is by his own wickedness that this happens. The word wickedness is simply a play on
or I'm sorry, an extension of the root Rasha, it is Risha, R-I-S-H-A-H. And therefore it is the actual expression of this man who is considered wicked. It's what he does. It is his way of life. It is his involvement with the old sin nature, for he has no other choice but to live under the control of the old sin nature. And it is his own wickedness, it is his own giving in to his own lust that he will fall. Thus, self-destruction, see, own wickedness. But also natural consequences, because you're causing it, you're bringing it upon yourself by breaking established natural laws, whether they are moral, whether they are spiritual, indeed, whether they are physical laws. You can break physical laws and end up with natural consequences. You can eat wrong. You can fail to take care of your body, fail to take care of your teeth. Hey, once your teeth are gone, although it's getting better these days, once your teeth are gone, you're in big trouble. You like oatmeal? So, see, you can break physical laws and suffer natural consequences. Now, you might not think of it now if you're young, you know, my teeth are strong and healthy and everything, but 50 years from now, you'll say, oh, why didn't I take care of my teeth? And there are many, many people you can talk to today who feel the same way, you know, who you can talk to, and they will tell you, hey, don't do as I did. But you know the nature of the beast. We won't listen to anybody who tells us what to do. We've got to learn the hard way. 9 times out of 10, we have to learn the hard way, or at least see it for ourselves. See the facts and respond to the facts. However, how many times do we see the facts and neglect them? Oh, yes, I know smoking will kill me. But, oh, yes, I know this, I know that, but we don't listen to the facts. Why is that? What do we do? Do we ignore them? Do we disbelieve them? You know, do we, oh, that's not true. 10 million scientists don't know what they're talking about. Nothing that feels so good can be that harmful to you, you know? And you can apply that to everything, anything, you know? Oh, yes, natural consequences. I was talking about physical laws, breaking physical laws, health things, okay? There's a combination, too, in some of those things. You break certain moral laws, you put yourself into a physical situation as well. You know, they call it BD. And that is a physical law violated and a moral law violated, and the consequences are quite extreme. Natural consequences, not only from the effects, but also from the cure in some cases. And I say in some cases because there is no cure for some. And remember, AIDS is considered BD. It is considered a venereal disease. Probably the worst thing that's ever hit, although it might be debatable. if you have done any research as to the effects of gonorrhea, I mean, syphilis and some of these things, you know, it's pretty gruesome. Been in the military, they show you real good films there. Especially just before landing. All right. Point 6. Verse 6. The righteousness, no, verse B, 6B. But the treacherous, and again we're talking about the deceivers, that's the same word that we saw in verse 3, the bakad. So it's referring to the ones who are deceivers. The deceivers will be cut, will be snared. Now that's interesting, you can see that's a play. The deceiver is the one who's trying to deceive you, trying to pull one over on you, but he's going to be cut himself. He's the one falling into the trap. He's trying to bring you into a trap, but he's the one going to fall into the trap. He will be caught by what? By his own greed. And I told you,
Let's see, A, you can put the word cot refers to natural consequences again. And basically receiving what he's trying to dish out. He's trying to deceive somebody, but in actuality he gets deceived, that is, he gets cut. His activity is self-deceiving. Because what is motivating him is H-A-W-W-A-H, Hawa, which is this destructive desire. That is what's motivating him, and it's just that. It's a destructive desire. It's a desire that is destructive toward others, and as well as being destructive toward himself. Now, to see a couple examples of Hawa, you can put down Psalm 52, verse 7, and Micah, chapter 7, 3 and 4. Let's look at both of these just to get an idea of what Hawa is, because it is a very intensive word here. Basically, it refers to the old sin nature, lust. Psalm 52, verse 7. Behold, the man who would not make God his refuge. Take a look at this guy, it says. Behold, take a look at the guy who would not make God his refuge, who would not rely upon God, not trust in God, not relate to God's creator policy, creator authority. Check this guy out. But instead, he trusted in the abundance of his riches. He trusted in his wealth. And here it's related to this word, Hawa, and was strong in his hawa, was strong in his evil desire, as the way they translated it there, which is fine. Look at the marginal note there, or his destruction. What the editors recognize is that this desire is destructive. And so they just simply put in the margin, destruction. But it is a destructive desire. What kind of desire is it? It is lust for personal advantage at the expense of all others. It is the lust for personal advancement above all and at the expense of all. In other words, you want to be top dog on the totem pole, and you want to step on anybody and everybody, or maybe not want to, but you will, see? You will step on anybody and everybody who gets in your way to that self-advancement. Well, this word hawa communicates that. Destructive desire, and was strong in his destructive desire. And all this is saying, you know, it doesn't amplify it very much there, just enough checking this guy out. Just look at him. And then the next verse talks about something else. But as for me, see? Now check out the guy who's rejecting truth, and then the next thing he says is, but as for me, I trust in grace provision. That's verse 8. I trust in chesed. The chesed of God forever and ever. And of course he gives thanks to him, recognizes grace. The man is described in more detail in verses 1 through 4. And after discussing him, the one who boasts in evil, and so forth, and then David, writing, then exhorts the reader to simply behold him. Check this guy out. This is the end that he has. The judgment upon him from God is in verse 5. But God will break you down forever. That is you who are described in verses 1 through 4. He will snatch you up and tear you away from your tent and uproot you from the land of the living. And the righteous will see and respect. The idea is to learn from this. Learn from this guy who's uprooted from the land of the living. Uprooted from the land of the living, by the way, refers to death. That is an idiom. See, we have the word destruction, and we have the word destroy and ruin and all these words that sometimes imply physical death but don't always mean it. they mean neutralization. But to be cut off or uprooted from the land of the living, that is always physical death.
Pardon me?
The next passage that helps us see the intensity of this word hawa is found in Micah, chapter 7. Verses 3 and 4. Concerning evil. Well, let's start at verse 1. Woe is me, for I am like the fruit pickers and the grape gatherers. There is not a cluster of grapes to eat, or a first ripe fig which I crave. The godly, he uses that to illustrate that there is just nothing in the land of any spiritual or moral value. Verse 2. The grace-oriented person, Hasid. C-H-A-S-I-Y-D, Hasid, should not be translated godly, as we've seen before, but this is the grace-oriented one. The grace-oriented one has died, or rather has perished from the land. There is no yashar person among men. So there you have spiritual and moral integrity. There's no spiritual integrity, no Hasid. There is no yashar, upright person among men. All of them lie in wait for bloodshed, emphasizing the violence, the criminal involvement of society. Each of them hunts the other with a net. They're at each other's throats, in other words, like animals, right? That's what animals do. Concerning evil, both hands do it well. What are you good at? I'm good at evil. The prince asks, also the judge, for a bribe. They say, you want to get off the hook? How much money you got? This is bribery. And a great man speaks the hawa of his soul. The intense, destructive, animalistic desire of his soul. Now you see the context of this. All of them lie in wait for bloodshed, see? And here he is, he's speaking the desire of his soul. He's speaking the lust of his soul. So they weave it together. That is, the prince, the judge, and the great man. They weave it together. They work this together. The best of them is like a briar. You like briars? Your name's Briar, I guess. Rare rabbit, you might like briars. But normally speaking, the briar is destructive, painful. The most upright, like a thorn hedge. In other words, destructive to society. The day when you post a watchman, your punishment will come. Then their confusion will occur. Oh, what a sad indictment. Look at verse 5. Do not trust in a neighbor. Do not have confidence in a friend. From her who lies in your bosom, guard your lips. Be careful about what you say to your acquaintances, to people who are with you, to your lover. For son treats father contemptuously. Daughter rises up against her mother. Daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. Man's enemies are the men of his own household. You know what verse 6 should remind you of? I don't mean what Jesus said. Verse 6, son treats father contemptuously, daughter rises up against her mother. First stage of four-generation curse. And actually, when the family curse is perpetuated to a maximum degree, there's going to be this constant disregard for authority. And it begins with family authority. So, this society is in a mess. And you can say that of all of them, that they are operating on hawa, this desire of the soul. Well, that's the word. And even though we didn't have to spend more time on it than the others. It's valuable to have some of that insight. By the way, the very next verses there, you see Micah's attitude. He said, but as for me, I just wait expectantly for the return of Jehovah. That's all I can do. Wait for the Lord to do his thing. That's what Micah says. All right, back to Proverbs 11. Point 7. And I rambled, and now I'm behind schedule. I wanted to get out of here halfway decent time. Can't very well quit and not finish my outline now, can I? Point 7 is verse 7. When a wicked man dies, his expectation will perish, and the hope of strong men perishes. What's the significance here? There is no peace, there is no joy after death. In and after death. Face of death and after death. No peace, no joy. For whom? For the wicked. For the one who's rejected standards of truth. Standards of truth designed to give you confidence in the face of any and every crisis, including physical death. So, what's the point? Wickedness provides no eternal value. It says, when a wicked man dies, his expectation will perish. What is his expectation? The word expectation is assurance, is confidence, is hope, all these ideas. And they're gone. See, when he dies, it's over. Why? Because he's trusting in himself. He's trusting in his, well, what's the context been emphasizing? He's trusting in his wealth. Back to verse 4. Riches do not profit in the day of wrath. And here he is dying. And when he dies, his expectation is gone. Everything he has done on earth has not accrued to a bit of benefit, because now he's face to face with his Maker, and all his hope, all his expectation is gone. It will perish. What's the significance here? No eternal value, in other words. See, there's just nothing of eternal value in what he does in time. We've already established the fact that there's no blessing in time, but we're also talking about eternal value. The next factor there in verse 7 is, and the hope of strong men perishes. This goes beyond the wealth idea. The next thing, the second thing that people trust in, that man trusts in, is his own physical ability. I can do anything if I put my mind to it. Problem is, I don't have a mind. Been on drugs too long. The strong man, the one who has physical strength of one kind or another. And see, when he dies, his hope perishes also. So the physical abilities provide no eternal value. Point 8, verse 8. 8b. But the wicked takes his place. Well, we already talked about that. It says the righteous is delivered from sorrow, from the pressures, from the effects of the cursed earth. But even though the believer is delivered from this, the wicked steps right in and takes his place, and continues to reap the natural consequences of the cursed earth. The wicked